Thank you, Joe. Joe has been really an important participant in all the activities we have been doing in trying to plan all this international engagement. I really want to make sure I recognize several individuals here, but particularly one group. The group that has been actually in mostly in low-resource countries for a long time, the group known as PACS, I'm sure all of you know, and I know there is enough volunteers and people who have been engaged for a long period of time. So I know there's a few over here, so if you guys can stand up so that people can see you. I think it's really important to recognize this because because what PACS has been doing is really incredible, and I think it has created some of the inspirations we have taken to start thinking in this direction. So I really want to say thank you and great work. And as you all know, one of their members is the award winner today. With that, there is a few people to recognize. I know Dr. Pankaj Jani is back there, and he is the current president of COSEXA. So hopefully we'll give him a few opportunities to give a comment. I had seen earlier King David Tawe from the WACS. He's also the president of WACS back there. So as we engage in those activities, I think it's really important to get connected to the leadership of those societies so that we work in synchrony and we work in tandem and actually work within their plan rather than creating our plan. So it's important to kind of connect with them as the day or the week goes by. With the next speaker I invited to come and talk to us is, you know, there is a lot of interest, as you know, with global health and global surgery since 2015. And one of the foundations that has been really active in the COSEXA region has been the GE Foundation. I think the GE Foundation has probably been the organization that has put in a lot more resources than a lot of other organizations who are probably, you know, talking a lot but are not yet doing the work. And I just wanted to give a chance for Dr. David Barash, who is the medical director for the GE Foundation, who is an emergency medicine doctor, who is very close ally with surgeons, to give us a little bit more commentary about their vision and how they engage surgeons in the work they do. So, David, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much, Dr. Farron. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with all of you about the work we're doing. I'm humbled, and yet I'm also really excited to have the chance to talk to ACS and all of you about our commitment to surgery and what started a few years ago. I'll give you a little bit of history. I'll give you a little bit about what we've done so far, and then I'll end with a little bit of a call to action, if you will. From a historical perspective, we started this work in 2015, right around the time that everything seemed to come together around global surgery, and I think we were lucky at the time. We had two efforts in place. One was an opportunity or a challenge from our foundation board to simplify our programs. We had about 25 programs, particularly invested in maternal and child health globally, and the board said, David, your mission is to try to simplify this for us and give us a bigger opportunity to do something much more focused and with greater impact. The second thing we were doing is we had started a program in Kenya helping to train nurse anesthetists to deliver anesthesia in remote parts of Western Kenya. And the board at that time said to me, David, this is a really impactful program. What are you going to do to try to scale it? And as we thought about this, we said, you know, to scale and to build a program around nurse anesthetists and to send them out to the last mile, whether it's in Kenya or Ethiopia or anywhere else, you really need an infrastructure and an ecosystem within which for them to work. So looking at that, looking at our work in maternal and child health, looking at the two challenges that the board put in front of me, some experience as an emergency physician and understanding what systems were like, having seen surgical suites around the world, we actually decided to put all our eggs in one basket and form Safe Surgery 2020. And I said we were lucky because I tweeted about surgery sometime in early 2015, maybe the end of 2014. As we were sort of thinking about this, I was testing the waters around safe surgery. And around 15 minutes after my tweet, I got a message from John Mira, who many of you know, saying we need to talk. And I met with John. He told me preliminarily about the work that he was doing for the Lancet Commission, some of the other work that was being done at WHO. I think Walt is here somewhere. We decided, you know what, there's an opportunity to really make a difference here by investing our funds in safe surgery. So we committed in September of 2015, we made the announcement in September of 2015, $25 million to launch a program called Safe Surgery 2020. That program is now 3 years in existence. It's a multi-sectorial partnership amongst many different organizations. The lead partner is an organization called Dahlberg. We're partnered with JAPIGO out of Johns Hopkins University, Harvard's PGSSC program, the G4 Alliance, and Assist International, who's very much a logistics partner on ours. So let me tell you a little bit about our approach and a little bit about our results. We knew this needed to be a multi-sectoral partnership, and I mentioned the partners we formed. We also knew we needed to engage government in what we thought we wanted to deliver as an important impact here. We thought that the most important way to build surgery successfully and locally was to build local leadership. That if you build leadership at the facility level, the leaders could begin to build their own ecosystem. You know, GE is a company that has built itself upon leadership training and building leaders for 125 years. So we really believe in leadership and the importance of it. So we developed it, we theorized that if we built leadership at the local level, we'd be able to build surgical capacity. The second thing we wanted to do is we wanted to innovate. Again, it's in our DNA to innovate, so we wanted to bring innovation to surgery. And not just innovation in technology, but innovation in training, innovation in leadership training, innovation in infrastructure, et cetera. So we brought leadership into the program as well. And lastly, data collection and analysis. We wanted to make sure that anything we were doing was going to be measured, we were going to make sure we were doing the right things, and if we weren't, we were going to pivot and do something different. So 3 years in, we launched the program in Ethiopia in 2016. In 2017 we began the program in Tanzania. And now in 2018, we are launching in Cambodia and Laos this year and wrapping up the program in 2019 and 2020. Wrapping up our $25 million commitment in 2019 and 2020. So far, in just 2 years, we've trained over 1,200 healthcare workers just in Ethiopia and Tanzania, many of them through the leadership training program. Many are biomedical engineers and technicians who are being trained to maintain and fix medical equipment. We're training many more nurse anesthetists than we had done before. And we're training people in social entrepreneurship, in particular with one specific innovation program. And that innovation program is oxygen. As many of you may know, oxygen is not available, particularly in the remotest parts of sub-Saharan Africa, Southeast Asia, and some parts, other parts around the world. So we worked with our partner, Assist International, to develop an oxygen program where you can generate and distribute oxygen from a district hospital level, not from the capital city, but from district hospital level, so that when you make it at the district hospital, it can be easily distributed to the last mile clinics that desperately need oxygen. That's a social enterprise model where the centers at the district hospitals are actually generating revenue by selling the oxygen at a fair price to the health centers, and they've demonstrated they can actually be self-maintaining and self-sustaining from a financial perspective over the initial 3 years of that program. We're now building new plants in Ethiopia, and our partner in Kenya is building 5 new plants in Kenya over the next couple of years. So we're going to scale that, and hopefully that'll be able to go beyond just the 2 countries I've mentioned, 3 countries. We started in Kenya, Rwanda, and we're now in Ethiopia, and we'll go into Tanzania as well. Let me, and we've had some clinical impact as well, this is not just around training people. We've seen an increase in surgeries performed in 10 of the hospitals we've worked with in Ethiopia, and a reduction of 30% in terms of surgical site infections. So it's not just training numbers, we've actually seen clinical impact in the early days of the program. Let me take a couple of minutes to tell you some things we've learned, because none of this was all perfect, and we didn't expect it to be perfect, so we expected to have some learnings. First of all, partnerships can work. It wasn't easy, and there are some partners in the room here. It was difficult to put these 5 partners together, but we forced the function. We said, you've got to figure out a way to make this work, and they've worked over the last 2-3 years to really figure out a way to make the partnership work. Each individual organization was essential to our success, so they had to come together and figure out a way to make those partnerships work, and they did it. They also did it by getting government buy-in, and not only partnering amongst the five organizations I mentioned, but each government had to be our partner. The government of Ethiopia, the government of Tanzania, moving forward, the government of Cambodia and Laos. And those governments stepped up in a big way from a national surgical planning perspective, from an engagement in deploying the programs, and even an adaptation of the programs themselves. Our leadership training program that was starting to be successful in Ethiopia has now been adopted by the government to spread much more than our original plan called for. The second thing is that local leadership, as I just touched on, is critical. If you don't engage local leadership, both at the facility level and at the national level, there's no chance for success. We have been very lucky to have two strong partners in the Ethiopian government and the Tanzanian government, and looking forward to those in Southeast Asia. We've also had incredibly powerful, strong leaders at the local level. So as we're working in this area, it's critically important to make sure that you have those local leaders committed to what you're doing. One of the areas we've seen commitment on the national level is all of these countries we mentioned have committed to developing national surgical plans. And in order to start any of this, as a couple of the prior speakers have addressed, you need to have a plan. So a national surgical plan is essential, and then a plan to deploy that plan, and of course, as everyone will ask, then funding to institute those plans. And then the third piece that I'd like to touch on in terms of our learning is that you need to innovate. There's a lot of work that's been done out there, a lot of successful work, but if we're not innovative and thinking of new ways to A, deliver oxygen, B, do national surgical plans, three, implement those plans, think about training. If we don't innovate in those areas, we're going to be doing the same things over and over again. And it's critically important that we're willing, we're able, we're challenged to innovate. And the last learning is you need to be willing and able to pivot. As you do these things, you're going to make mistakes, guaranteed. Don't expect it to be perfect. Our partnership was one that had to pivot and work and challenge each other to work together. We didn't get it exactly right on oxygen the first time, so we had to do some things differently. And as we go, we've learned that we have to be nimble and we have to be willing to pivot. I'll close by saying something that I said 2 years ago or a year and a half ago at CUGH conference in Washington. And that is, with the number of people in this room, the number of people I saw in the room 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, there are some burning embers here, smoldering embers here. And since 2015, with the intersection of all the vectors around safe surgery, we've really started to get some heat going around the efforts around safe surgery. I think it's time to pour some gasoline on those embers. It's critically important that we get not just the 100 or so people in this room, but hundreds of thousands of people embracing safe surgery on a local level, on a national level. We all know the statistics about how many people die and how many people don't have access to surgery. The smoldering embers are good, but it's not enough. We really need to step up. All of us need to go back home to our communities and say, this is the number one public health crisis globally. Let's bring attention to it. Let's bring funding to it. Let's bring people to it. And we'll really start to see a difference in the next 4, 5, 6 years, I hope. So thank you very much, Garmer, for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Contributions the GE Foundation is making to make surgery available and safe in very needy parts of the world. We appreciate that. You know, I guess right now, before we go too much further, I wonder if Dr. Pankajani would stand up. Pankajani would stand up and say a few words about COSEXA. Pankaj is the Dr. Jani is the current president of COSEXA, and of course is one of the partners that we've worked with in establishing this American College of Surgeons HWASA project. If you could tell us just a little bit about your perspectives on COSEXA's needs and COSEXA's opportunities.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. Good afternoon, everybody. COSEXA at the present moment has 12 member countries, but because of its success, 7 other countries have satellite sites which are training surgeons. We, at the present moment, cover a population over 500 million people in East, Central, and Southern Africa, for those of you who don't know. And we have just under 100 training sites in COSEXA. When I left last week on Thursday, I met with the Minister of Health in Kenya, and it's taken us 5 years to advocate and get full buy-in from the government in Kenya which is now fully behind COSEXA in training surgeons. You referred to,
The collaboration with the college,
okay. So we have been, I have been personally here at the ACS meetings over the last 5-6 years.
And other organizations.
Our main partnership is with the Royal College of Surgeons of Ireland, which seeks or gets funds from Irish Aid and supports COSEXA over the last 10 years with funding. Funding is important, and we get about 500,000 euros every year from the Irish College, from Irish Aid through the Irish College to support our activities. This has been deteriorating as we have been raising funds. At the present moment, COSEXA raised funds up to 70% of what its needs are, and we hope to get to 100% in the next 5 years. Our other collaborators are, in a big way, the American College of Surgeons, the Royal College of Surgeons of Edinburgh, England. We also have 46 other organizations. We're very thankful to PACS here, and my friend, the president of PACS, they had hospitals which were running in the region, and they supported us initially, providing 70% of the trainees who came for the examinations at one stage. But now we have other hospitals which are training surgeons. Our collaborations have helped us to move where we are, and we are very thankful for that. And I mentioned 19 countries, but 12 member countries of COSEXA. It seems that it's easy to get surgery going in each country, but the context is very different in each country. At the present moment, I just mentioned that after 5 or 7 years of interacting with the Medical Practitioners Dentist Board in the Ministry of Health, we've got full buy-in from the Minister of Health in Kenya, so much so that a task force has been established to increase the number of medical specialists and to create the National Surgical Obstetrics and Trauma Plan in Kenya. With particular emphasis to the American College of Surgeons, I am very grateful regarding to these initiatives which have come forward, namely in the way of increasing the number of women surgeons in Africa. So we've established some support coming from them to encourage women trainees to take up more training in surgery. We're also very grateful regarding to the leadership course, which is what we have been attending, and we're partnering to run one in the near future in 2019 to create better leaders in each country to advance the cause of surgery. And this collaboration, which is the latest one for creating an ACS COSEXA hub, we're looking at it. The council is deliberating on it. We've made our request to the ACS in which direction it should go. And we're trying to see how we can move this forwards. Our strength in COSEXA lies in the diversity of our 19 countries and 12 member countries, but it also becomes a weakness at times when you have ventures like this. So I think with those few words, if there are any specific questions or...
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Bob.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Pankaj. And I know there is a lot of... needs, and I think it is important for our fellows who want to provide specific volunteerism activities to really go to our Operation Giving Back website, see which partner schools from COSEXA are asking for specific help and advice and support. There is a list of COSEXA training sites within the region where at times we see requests for a urologist or a thoracic surgeon or another. So I think that partnership between the COSEXA schools and Operation Giving Back is going to continue. And so I'll encourage individual surgeons to still engage independently by partnering with those individual needs that are coming through our website. So I think it's important because, as Dr. Pankajani said, there is over 100 training sites, and almost all the sites need some additional assistance. There are other sites who are ready to keep going, but they need one little more help to get it started. So unless we really find ways to support them to amplify not only the quality of the surgical training, but also the quantity in terms of producing more surgeons. I think that has now become the weakest link. We can really do a lot many other things, but if we really don't invest on developing the individual professionals who can provide the care, we would be back here talking about this in many years to come. So some energy, I think, needs to go towards, and investment needs to go towards training the surgeons. And training, actually, the confident, well-trained surgeons has to be our priority. And so there is some additional tweaking we may have to do for the coming years. We have to also see if this works. How can we go to the western side of Africa? How can we go to the central part of America? Or how can we organize ourselves to go to the Asia part of things? So there is a lot more work to do. We just want to say this is really almost, unfortunately, I'm kind of ashamed to say that, but it feels like almost a beginning. And I think we need to, Dr. Barash said, I think we need to really get this momentum a little bit more exponentially going, and we have to invest and partner in producing more surgeons. I think without that, we cannot really get the solutions we are looking for. So I will, we have a few more minutes to complete our sessions, and I just, can't help but see Dr. Gilhood, who is here, who has been all over the continent of Asia and Africa and Latin America. Maybe a few words of wisdom update, a just brief. I know you like the mic, but I want to limit you.
Everyone knows me too well. Thank you, Garima. Yes, we are always at beginnings, and we are here to work our way out of a job. As I say that, when we started, Operation Giving Back was an initiation from the college. Mission to Heal is a direct outgrowth from that. And I had brought Gurma to stand in the unit that we're using now as our Asian unit through the mobile surgical approaches to Asia. But coming next is something even bigger and better. At the time we first discussed this, it was on the subject of how can we get succession, then maybe not just to succeed, but to supersede, and how can we create not as a manager good followers, but as a good leader, great leaders. I can say that because 1 meter from my left hand is one of my proudest proteges as a surgery resident, and others here present are taking very major leads in this. There is a unique opportunity now, and the American College of Surgeons, especially OGB, are going to be critical in it, because what we are trying to do is establish training programs through several access points in sub-Saharan Africa, both through Francophone and Anglophone Africa. A unique piece of this comes aboard a very unusual creation, and that was not for the purposes of healing or helping, but when the two leaders in the world that came together with a little bit of innovative imagination and said, can we do something to reduce the threat to mankind? Gorbachev and Reagan got together in Reykjavik and signed the START Treaty. They destroyed the Pershing theater nuclear force, and from that, immediately, these magnificent, unstoppable vehicles called the Mancat six-wheel drive are now rededicated, repurposed with a very modern surgical suite with triple point failure. The exhibit that is in the back there that one of my able assistants who just returned from me on a surgical mission from Mongolia, Conlon Pierce, will give you those details. What we're going to be doing is making a transect that enters Ethiopia. At the beginning of this next week, we were going to bring them here, as Dr. Bass knows well, as we head with the exhibit hall in Chicago 4 years ago in the initiation when Gurma began with OGB. This will come into Djibouti, Berbera, Hargeisa to get, as we say, muddy and bloody in our shakeout run in Somaliland. Then it goes to our new partner who's identified Mission to Heal as the premier medical project of the African Union. So we will attend the summit meeting of the African Union in January, then come down the Rift Valley through Ethiopia and several sites that PACS has previously established where I have been there, and also our theme is the furthest peoples first. So not to go to the capital alone, but to bring from the capital the indigenous trainees and give them a first-class facility that is entirely self-sufficient and can be unattended for 18 months for any practical purposes, with the exception of the group that we have here. We need leaders to make new leaders, and the trainers to do that. Now, a lot of folk have said to you, look what I just did. I came from a mission, and I did 192 cases. Look at me. On our second to last mission in 2 weeks, 198 cases were done, and I am very proud to say I did none of them. In the last several, I assisted without putting on surgical gloves. So as a consequence, by indigenizing the care and making local leaders, Mission to Heal is an active arm of Operation Giving Back, is seeking your help in producing this new cadre, this new generation. We have all the materials out there, so yet another opportunity to sign up for Operation Giving Back. And thank you so much for your participation in making this a reality.
We're supposed to be here till 1, aren't
yes.
we?
Yes,
okay. Next speaker.
Nestor Gomez from Guayaquil, Ecuador. It's only 5 minutes.
Yes.
As a past governor of my country, of the American College of Surgeons, we want to give to the American College of Surgeons a very gratitude action for Dr. Tefera. When we have the earthquake, 24 hours after, we have a touch by informatic, and he put us 500 trauma surgeons in order to be ready to come to our country. An applause.
Hello, everyone. My name is Prem Yohanan. I am an orthopedic surgeon from Mozambique, Maputo, and I have met many of you in Maputo last year. I am from the College of Surgeons of East Central and Southern Africa, and all of us like to call ourselves the actual foot soldiers of global surgery. We are those guys, you know, who are on the terrain in Africa working. We are dedicated to staying there. We train surgeons there, and we've been doing it for the last so many years. COSEXA was formed in 1999 out of the ASEA, that is the Association of Surgeons of East Africa, which was founded in 1953. In 1999, it became COSEXA. And from there on, there was a motivated group of local surgeons who had decided that there is no solution other than to train surgeons locally and have them retained there. And that's why we started training surgeons in the districts. And that practice, now we've got 100 centers where we are training this. We have trained over 500 surgeons. Now we have 2,000 surgeons who are working in the region. The actual foot soldiers of global surgery who are working there behind the lines. Now, I would like to tell all of you and invite all of you to work closely with COSEXA, College of Surgeons of East Central and Southern Africa, through the Center for Global Surgery, which has been recently been passed through council in the August meeting which we had in Malawi. So it's the CCGS, or the Center, COSEXA Center for Global Surgery. I'll be around the meeting, and you would please, if you need any further information, you might please contact me for that. Thank you very much.
Dr. Prem is also one of our international visiting scholars this year, which is wonderful to have you here.
Yes. Congratulations, well done. I think these kind of events are very necessary to get more people connected and for leading this kind of effort. My question to you comes up often by our members when we travel abroad, question of liability. We have been very fortunate. For the last 25 years, we have never encountered such a problem, but it kind of bothered me because I keep hearing same questions asked by our fellows. So do you have any information, any advice, or maybe somebody else here in the audience who have much more experience to see how to do about it and what should be done in order to minimize risk to our fellows?
Yeah, thank you for that question. Thank you for that question. There is no one answer to that. It varies from institutions to institution. Where I work at the University of Wisconsin, we are fortunate enough, as long as my chairman approves my international trip, I am automatically covered from all evacuation, malpractice, and et cetera, et cetera. So I really do think these are the kind of things we can work together to disseminate through our institutions and share experiences and learn from each other so that where you are can also take up on these issues, because you don't have to start from scratch, but bring at least these ideas that are already working. And I can assure you, it doesn't really cost a lot. It's just a matter of our leaders to understand that this kind of need is there, and we have to also make it easy for them to understand. And so I would just say, it's really important that we organize ourselves. I do think it's important that, particularly those of you for now who are in academic global surgery program, you should attend our meeting from 3 to 5 today, because this kind of a consortia or group building is going to be a critical piece where guidelines and recommendations and suggestions for how we want to conduct ourselves and how we want to also work with our leaderships would come out of a body like that. So I would invite everyone that works particularly in academic global surgery environments to come from 3 to 5 over at the West End in ballroom, I think 3, where we're gonna have a discussion about how can we organize ourselves and answer all these kind of questions so that we all will function the same way.
Dr. Tafera, I'm Mark Fisher. I represent the American Burn Association Reconstructive Committee. I'd like to raise one point which I think would be worth discussing at the meeting that you just mentioned as well, and that's the point of advocacy. So we've been inspired by visionary people who've gone before, who out of their own pocket went and did amazing things, and we were challenged to try to make things grow and expand. And I think what's missing is opportunity in some ways. Not that there isn't an opportunity to go, but you have to have support in order to do that. And if you look at our government, Health and Human Services, State Department, there is no surgical advocate. Look at the NIH, where are the grants that you can apply for? They simply don't exist. And so I think advocacy has to be a part of our agenda to go to our government here in the U.S. To create buy-in from our government to support this groundswell that we're all experiencing, not just here in the U.S., but in all the partner countries that are doing this sort of work, the United Kingdom, et cetera. So I think that should be a part of our discussion.
Yeah, thank you for raising that. And that's we have an advocacy subcommittee. That particular issue is going to be our main agenda for this year. There is the USAIDs and whatnot that funds, but none is. So we are trying to work through the advocacy arm of the ACS to see if we can make headways we have to educate a lot of people about the importance of this, and I think this is why things are now actually exponentially coming up and bubbling up. And last year we made a little attempt to go to NIH and Fogarty International, but this year I think we have to make this a major issue from our trip to the Hill. So we are working on that.
Good afternoon, Dr. Camilla Carroll, and I'm from the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland, and I'd like to commend Dr. Bass and her colleagues for an excellent presentation on global surgery. As a piece of advertisement for the work that RCSI have done globally, for the last 10 years we have partnered COSEXA, and Dr. Jani is here, in providing a medical and surgical curriculum to train surgeons in the region. We also have provided an accreditation service to, at the end of their training, assess and credential with fellowships from the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. And we have done this with government funding from a small island nation. So we're reaching out to this global group the American College, and we are saying we would like to work with you in continuing to develop what is a very important piece of work. If we look at Ireland, our GDP, and the amount of money we have provided for COSESCA, surely looking at the American situation, you can move this on into a much more global way. And I welcome your partnership, and I hope we can continue to collaborate. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. That's good to see you again. And we actually just had, just before this session, a meeting of the presidents and the representatives of all of our international colleges that are represented here. Of course, the RCSI was so represented there as well. And one of the outcomes of that, really the focus of the meeting was on global surgery. And we have agreed that we will set up a preliminary task force to be chaired by Professor Andrew Hill from New Zealand, actually, but with key partners of those that have significant existing programs, and RCSI was highlighted as a really notable contributor in this space, of course, particularly with COSEXA, to set up a task force to start, first of all, let's do a roadmap of what all of our organizations have, because there's a lot of overlap or gaps, and how do we better tabulate that? So we'll have a task force that will do that. And we also agreed that we would convene a group of those key stakeholders that are interested in understanding this better at the ISS meeting next August. We'll have a planning group to plan that meeting, ideally commit a full day of a relatively small group initially to kind of start to work on some of these key partnerships and to examine the contributions that organizations like ours and even our government might be able to make.
My name is Dr.
Craig. I will just say you'll be the last one because I think time is up. And I just want to make a correction for the ballroom. It's A and B for the consortium conversation. And from 2 to 3, there is a meeting for surgical resident interest group in global surgery. So that's in the same ballroom, A and B, at the Westin Hotel. So please go ahead.
Okay, my name is Grace Ayensu Dankwa, and I'm a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and also a fellow of the Ghana College of Surgeons and Physicians. In all of this, throughout since yesterday and today, I just realized there's a big element that is missing, which is I'm an American trained surgeon, but I've moved to Ghana. And I live in Ghana now, and I've been there for 5 years. So there's a, when you talk about training local physicians and the NGOs parachuting in and doing all the work and then leaving, there's a big gap that is left between the American side or the NGO side and the local side. And for I'm realizing, as I've been in Ghana for now 5 years, that there's a big gap in between, and people like me who are American-trained or European-trained go back to Ghana and act as the bridge between the two. So as I've been in Ghana, I've been working with Dr. Glenn Gelhood for Mission to Heal. I'm the like the local person that kind of helps mediate between the American side and the Ghana side, and mainly when the NGOs leave, the whole post-op care and the follow-up, all this stuff, a lot of issues come up that I feel like we haven't truly addressed here. And that's a very important aspect that I think we should kind of think about and integrate into the whole big global surgery aspect of it.
Well, thank you, first of all. Thank you, first of all, for being committed and going back and giving back. I think this is incredible and it's commendable, and it's really a very important thing you do. I really would love to work with people and individuals like you. So there is a ton of opportunity that we can organize together, and so this is part of why we have this meeting. So to network and connect. And so please find me later and let's talk. And for the rest of you, hopefully we'll see you either in ballroom A and B or at our reception tonight between 6 and 7:30. So thank you. Let me say thank you to all the presenters, please. And Dr. Bass, thank you so much.